All right. Well, I guess I'll go ahead. Thanks for having me. What an honor and a privilege it is to be able to serve in a meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. I'm up in the wintry mountains of Winter Park, Colorado, today with my family, and enjoying life and being a part of life, which before the program of Overeaters Anonymous, I wasn't really doing that, wasn't enjoying life, and I couldn't be a part of. I was pretty much vegged out. So I'm grateful to have the opportunity today to be able to show up and not be in the food, not be in the behaviors, and that my disease has been, it's in me. I'm not going to say the disease has been removed, but the need to compulsively overeat, exercise, the body dysmorphia, just the need to do all that, to throw up, to binge and restrict. Has been completely removed. That to me is the miracle of this program. Because 4.5 years ago, when I first entered the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous, if you told me that's what was going to happen to me, I don't know that I would have believed you. So if you're new and you don't, you're just starting this journey, which we heard from a couple of newcomers already in the meeting, keep coming back, keep listening, keep identifying in, and know that you are welcome here. This is your home, and we are all here to share our experience, strength, and hope. So I'll just start off by telling you a little bit about who I am. Like I said, I'm Jen A. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I'd like to say I've struggled with food my entire life. I'll give you proof of that. So this is a picture of a girl like me. My highest weight was 220 pounds that I remember. At least that's the last time I actually weighed myself. This picture, you can see the smile on my faces and the protruding cheeks. But that was just me in a family photo. Everybody else is cut out. That's pretty much the biggest that I remember actually being. And I would like to say that I came into the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous that heavy, but that's not my story either. My story differs a little. I came into the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous like this. I'm an anorexic, I'm a bulimic, I'm a compulsive exerciser. I like to shoot up HCG injections. I like to take pills called laxatives, and I like to drink a whole bunch of potions that are going to keep me thin. And at this weight, which was 120 some pounds, that's how I came into the room. And I didn't identify in easily because the face-to-face meetings that I was at, there weren't any anorexic bulimics like me. But I try and keep this neutral, singleness of purpose, because I feel that, we are to call ourselves compulsive overeaters. But you'll hear from my story just what I did with food and food behaviors that make me eligible for Overeaters Anonymous. Today, for the last, I'd say for the last 3.5 years, by God's grace and mercy, I've weighed the same amount. I'm not going to tell you my weight today because, as my friend in Beverly Hills says, to compare is to despair. We all come here on the same losing streak, whether you're underweight, overweight. We all came in dying on the inside. And today, I know that my insides aren't dying and my outsides try to be pretty joyful and bubbly. And that's just who I am today. I'm grateful for that. So, how did compulsive overeating begin for me? Well, if I'm to think back about the first time I ever took that compulsive bite, the first time I remember was at age 8, jonesing and wanting more of something. I was at my friend Leanne Lebesky's house, and we were eating food out of her mom's pantry and playing Atari upstairs. And as we played that game, I couldn't concentrate on the game or on my friendship with this girl at age 8. All I could think about was the Twinkies that were down in her mom's pantry. And I proceeded to tell her that I had to go to the bathroom. And I went downstairs and I loaded my pockets and just filled them with the Twinkies and whatever else I could get my hands on. And I remember slipping off into the bathroom and just shoving them down my throat as fast as I could, and then concealing the wrappers, right? Winding them up in toilet paper, sticking them in the trash. I mean, I went through the trash to conceal the trash. Isn't that crazy? But that's what we do. And I was doing that at age 8. That's the first time I can honestly remember that. I will just say this, that it wasn't food wasn't easily accessible in my house. I did have to steal. I stole from grocery stores. I stole from other people's homes. I did a lot of babysitting. They always loved me to come over and babysit because I would leave their house the cleanest, but I was really good at picking and eating out a little of this and a little of that, so they would never catch me. And I don't know if you guys ever did this, but you turn the ice cream container upside down, you let it defrost, you take from the bottom, and then you put it back in so they can't see how much has gone down. I tried that trick and got away with it. My mom was pretty healthy. We never had soda. We never had sugar cereal. But there were two things in the pantry that my mom always had. One was chocolate chips, because in case my mom needed to make cookies for somebody. And two was cake mix, because if it was going to be somebody's birthday, we were going to have a birthday cake. And I remember sneaking into the pantry and opening just a little side of the chocolate chips and taking a few, and then going back and taking more and taking more. And the other thing was the cake mix. I remember just getting one of these long teaspoons that my mom would have in the drawer. And I would open up the box of cake mix and I would literally shovel dry cake mix into my mouth. I'm a compulsive overeater for sure, right? And the desire for more and more just kept coming.
Can you see my cup anywhere? Am I going blind?
Sorry, somebody's not muted. No, we don't see your cup, just in case you don't know that you're not muted. And let's see. So as I became older, in high school, I managed my weight pretty easily. I was a competitive swimmer. I swam at great lengths. I'm not going to tell you I was the thinnest girl on the swim team. I was pretty chunky. I know I was more pleasantly plump because that's what the cleaning ladies called me. My sister and I are 18 months apart, and they would walk in the house and they go, "Which one are you?" And I would be like, "Well, I'm Jennifer." And they'd be like, "Oh, you're the pleasantly plump one." And so that's how they could tell my sister and I apart. So I knew I held extra weight, but I was able to control it through that exercise and that swimming. Well, when I went to college, I didn't swim and I drank and I joined a sorority and I drank and I ate in all the different places, right? They had these great places where you could go and you could have Chinese and you could have chicken and you could have Mexican. And there was that soft serve ice cream machine. Like, that was a girl's dream at college. At least it was mine. And most people gain the freshman 15 in college. Well, I'm just going to tell you, I gained the freshman 50. So from August to December, I gained 50 pounds. And I came home and my family, thanks, was that 10? And my family said to, no, my family said to me, okay. And my family said to me, they were like, "Oh my gosh, Jenny, what happened to you?" And I was like, "Oh." And yeah, I was bulging out of my clothes. So I began to put on my Sony Walkman and I put on my running shoes and I went over to the high school stadium and I ran the stairs and I ran around the track and I proceeded to diet and try and lose weight while I was home for those 4 to 6 weeks from college. Again, I could do it, right? I could diet down and eat whatever I wanted. I wasn't drinking when I came home. So the weight came off pretty easily. And I'm just going to tell you, like, I didn't do so hot in college. Talk about the bedevilments in your life. Like, I go back and look at where the bedevilments showed up in college for me. I had trouble with grades. I had trouble with friends. I had trouble with everything. My life was becoming quite a mess. So I came home. And I proceeded to get a job. And I went to college locally here in Colorado. And again, I just continued to yo-yo up and down and up and down and up and down. So eventually, I fell in love and got married. And when I did get married, wow, was I the thinnest I ever was, you know? In fact, I'm the same weight today as when I got married. And that was I don't even remember what year I got married, but let me tell you, it was 20 plus years ago. And I look at my wedding pictures and just kind of laugh. But I was thin. Let me tell you how thin I was for how long of a time. We went on the cruise. I wore a bikini for the first time in my life. We ate at the buffet and I came home 15 to 20 pounds heavier. And I cooked, and my ex-husband was 6'5", and he could eat everything in sight. So I'd make these huge crock pot meals, and they would literally be gone in 2 days. And I would bake and I would do all this stuff, and food was everywhere, and I could have all the food that I wanted. And it progressively got worse. And the photo that I showed you at the beginning of that 220 pounds, that's where I skyrocketed to. And I had kids, I had children, I gained the weight, I tried to take the weight off. Pregnancies were really good for me because I could hide my weight. you know, I just, I, it was, I could hide what I was eating, or I didn't have to hide what I was eating because I was pregnant. I could eat, you know, six bowls of Frosted Flakes, or that's what I ate with my son. With my daughter, I ate Skittles. I remember that every single day, popping in those Skittles by the packages, you know. Thank you so much. And then, you know, from there, I'll just have to say that, the unmanageability in my life got really bad. Life was spinning out of control. I was dieting up and down. And then, you know, I finally just, I got divorced. I'd like to say at the time, I will tell you, I said it was all my ex-husband's fault. Today, I know that it was, probably mostly my fault. And I know that I was in the disease, and, you know, he was an addict too. You know, he dealt with, addiction. And we tried to get help. But the reality was, is that, you know, you could only help yourself. And I didn't know I was an addict, but I could see that there were problems for him. So I went to counseling for several years. I thought that counseling would fix it. But it didn't. I kept eating. And I finally got divorced. And I don't know if anybody in this room is divorced, but it's called a divorce diet. And so after I got divorced, I went to the gym and I got really skinny again. And this time I got really skinny because I went to this MMA gym, and they had this big cage. And I used to run around and do these like MMA classes. And my trainer, his name was Joey Teardrops. He was a badass MMA fighter. And all these girls that I was going into the gym with, I was in my 30s, they were in their 20s. They were doing these bikini body building competitions. And I'm like, oh, I'm doing the same exercises as them. I went from 190 pounds down to 170 pounds. I'm like, I can get skinny and get into one of those fancy sparkly bikinis with the high heels. So I did it. So I started working out 7 days a week, sometimes twice a day. I was eating 4 ounces of tilapia, 3 stalks of asparagus, a half a cup of rice, and drinking protein shakes in between with, and they had like these great sweet flavors like raspberry with stevia. So I wasn't missing out on the sweet treats. But I will tell you, I got down to 5% body fat, and I got up on stage and I did that competition. And I was so proud of myself. Like when they talk, when Bill talks in the big book, like I had arrived, like I stood up there in all my glory, sparkling on that stage in that hot pink bikini. Like this was it. I'm finally going to be thin. And then I went to Costa Rica 5 days later with my aunt, my cousin, 20 pounds comes back on pretty doggone fast when you're at the beach, sloshing margaritas and nachos and Mexican food. And, there I was right back to the same place again. I'd like to say that, you know, I've just continued to do exercise and things like that, but eventually the exercise wasn't good enough. I couldn't keep the weight off with exercise. I started restricting. You know, I would binge, I would starve myself. I wouldn't eat for days. I would go on this crazy apple diet where I would eat like 5 or 6 apples a day. And my coworkers would look at me like I'm crazy, 'cause I'd have them lined up on my desk. And by the end of the day, they're all gone. And my coworker goes, "Do you just shit your brains out?" And I was like, I don't know. I'm like, I like apples, you know? I mean, what were people thinking of me, right? And then one day my other coworker looks over at me and she goes, "You know, you're really skinny. You need to gain some weight." And I was like, oh, and I was on my way that day after work to the clinic to get a round of HCG. And if you don't know what that is, it's pregnant woman's urine. You inject it, you eat 500 calories in 30 days, you can drop at least 2 to 5 pounds a day. I'm not kidding. It's a really, really good feeling. You see, I sought an effect from the food. I sought an effect from the alcohol. I sought an effect from exercise. I can seek an effect from just about anything you put in front of me. I am a full-blown addict. And in the doctor's opinion, I'll just talk about this. It says on XXVIII, the doctor says, "Men and women, I, Jennifer Marie, right, eat essentially because I like the effect produced by food, right? I shoot up this HCG because I like the effect it produces. It makes me skinny. It makes the scale number drop. I like the gym because I sweat it out and then I think, oh, it's gone, right? And then I continue to eat more. The sensation is so elusive for a girl like me that while I admit to you all it is injurious, I cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. I can't see what I can't see. I can't hear what I can't hear. And I don't know what I don't know. until I walked in the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous and you people showed me this. You showed it to me on black and white. You said it out loud to my face and I began to hear it. To them, or to me, my compulsive overeating life, the bulimia, the anorexia is the only normal thing that I know. I laugh today because you know what I say after this pandemic this last year? I said, the only thing that's normal in my life is the cycle on my washing machine. That's the only thing that's normal in an addict's life like me, right? And so guess what I become? I become restless. I become irritable. I become discontented unless I can experience what? It's telling me right here, the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking what? Bites and more bites, more trips to the gym, right? More shots, more injections, more laxatives, more pills. And I see other people, they go to the gym, it takes off the weight. I see other people like my sister, she has one bite of pie and puts the fork down. Who the fork are you, right? After you have succumbed to the desire again, like I did, right? The phenomenon of craving develops. And I pass through the well-known stages of what I call a binge. It says a spree in here. I put binge. And you know what? I immerse remorseful the next day with a firm resolution to say, I'm never, ever going to do that again. I don't know, but it says it was repeated over and over again. I can agree with that. I did it over and over and over again. That's the insanity in me as an addict, right? With food and exercise pills and potions. Once I start, I can't stop, and I can't stop from starting. That's what I know today. And I resolve, I'm never going to do this again. How many of us, let's see a hands raised. How many of us said we're going to stop on Monday, right? And now we're going to stop on Tuesday, right? How about Friday? How about Saturday? They all start in why? Why not stop today, right? And for me, I got to stop on a holiday. It started with why too. For God's sake, I get what you people are saying, right? A Memorial Day, I finally had enough. I put the food down. This is how it happened. I'd like to say that, you know, I continued to restrict, I continued to diet down, but eventually the buildup of human emotions happened. You see, what happens to me is I can't deal with life on life's term as an addict. I got to seek an effect from something on the outside. For me, it was food and exercise. And one day when the buildup of human emotions happened and I got dumped by the man I thought was going to marry me, and he left a box full of my stuff on my back porch and said, basically, F you, and I don't ever want to talk to you again after dating for a year and a half. I said, oh, and I'm going to tell you that I picked up that night. Nope, I didn't pick up that night. I didn't pick up the next week. I didn't even pick up the next month. 35 days later, I don't even remember when it was. This thing happened to me. It's called the mental blank spot. I don't remember doing it. I don't remember even making a conscious decision. It's just that I drove to the nearest 7-Eleven and I walked in and Little Debbie became my friend and Ben and Jerry, there was a small pint of that and then the Cheetos and then the this and then the M&Ms and I loaded my car with it. And before I even got out of the parking lot of that convenience store, I had eaten it all. Crazy, right? Totally freaking crazy. That's me. And I'd like to say it stopped with that one convenience store, but it didn't. So 6 convenience store later, yep, that's the addict in me. I can't get enough. I want more. I got to have more. And I don't even remember being consciously aware of doing all this. I'm being totally honest with you all. I don't remember it, but I remember where I ended up that night. I remember where I was. I was pulled up in Greenwood Village in the back of a Trader Joe's. I was in the alleyway. Do you know I love alleyways? I love back alleyways. I love broken down vehicles by the side of the road. I love bathrooms. You know why? That's where a girl like me has some of her best surrendering moments with God. That's where I get down on my knees. And I won't say I was on my knees that night. Nope, I was holding a toothbrush in one hand. The door was flung open. The wrappers were on the side of me in the passenger seat. I had just thrown up everything I ate because I wasn't going to come back to Overeaters Anonymous and tell you all that I had eaten. If it wasn't in my stomach, perhaps I could continue to lie. Perhaps I could just come and you wouldn't know, right? You wouldn't have a clue that I ate. And I thought it was okay because nobody knew about it and I could just throw it up. But you know what? Something else deep down inside of me was happening that night. I'm going to call it God. That's what I call it today. And it was a light that shone down through the front windshield of my car back in that back alleyway. And for some reason, I was broken down. I started to cry. I thought, oh my God, I can't go on like this. Sound like Bill in the Big Book? That's what I remember. I hadn't even read that part in the Big Book yet. I can't go on like this. I can't do it anymore. Help me. And I cried out that desperate cry. I'm sure other people have cried it out too. It sounds like this. Help me, God. Help me, God. Because I can't do it on my own. I knew I couldn't. The evidence was in my hand. It was outside the door. It was in the driver's seat. I can't keep doing this. And you know what was the best thing there for me that night? There's this thing, it's called the telephone. For most of us in Overeaters Anonymous, it feels like a 1,000-pound weight. And it sat right between me in my car, in the console. And I picked it up and I dialed the number of a man who sat across from me in a meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. He had read these 9-step promises. And you know what really was appealing to me about him? Not just that he was in a normal size body weight, but that when he spoke, he carried this message of peace and serenity. When he talked, it was like he was an oil can and like the water just rolled down the side of him. How does that happen? Like anything anybody's ever said to me, anything that's ever happened just felt like, I was always angry, irritable, restless, and discontent. That's what we read about in here, right? And that was my whole life. You know what I saw in this man? I saw the opposite of irritable, restless, and discontent. This is what I saw. I saw that he was no longer living on the edge, that he wasn't full of anxiety and fear and uptight. He was calm and peaceful. He wasn't bad-tempered. He wasn't crabby, and he didn't even have a short fuse. In fact, he was good-humored and easygoing. He wasn't discontented. He wasn't dissatisfied or unhappy or fed up. No, he was content. He was satisfied. And when he read those 9-step promises, I thought, can that be me? Can I have those promises? Is that available to a girl like me? Because inside I thought I was the most terrible human being, right? Who does the things that I do with food and with needles and with gyms? Who does that kind of stuff? And all that shame, right? And so this is what I'll just tell you. I picked up the phone and I called him and I said, hey, I don't know if you remember me. My name's Jen A and I'm in your Saturday meeting on Yale. And I'm wondering if you can help me. I said, I just binged and purged. And I'm wondering if you can sponsor me. And I said, would you? And he said, yep, we'll talk about it Saturday. Get to a meeting. That's all he said. He didn't give me a lecture. He didn't tell me about himself. You know, he wasn't on a moral hilltop. All he said is get to a meeting. So the next morning at 6:30 a.m., I went to a meeting. I'd like to tell you it was a meeting of Overeaters Anonymous, but I'm just going to say there weren't that many meetings here in Colorado that were at 6:30 in the morning. So I did what I needed to do. And I sat in the rooms of AA and they let me in. The meeting was called There is a Solution Meeting. And there was about, I would say there was about 6 to 10 people that were there every morning at 6:30. I'll never forget when I walked in before work and I'm prancing around in my pencil skirt, my business outfit and my high heels thinking, okay, I'm here. I came to the meeting. Oh, I was pissed and angry inside. And the guy at the coffee bar at the clubhouse looks up at me and he goes, good morning. Are you new? And I said, yeah, this is my first time here. Well, welcome. So glad you came. And I was in my head being like, F you. Like, I'm not happy to be up at 6:30. I'm in a really terrible place. And I'm just going to go have a seat. And I sat down. Needless to say, I did say to that guy about 120 days later, thank you for being the smiling face that greeted me the first day that I walked into the clubhouse. I'll never forget that man's face and I'll never forget that day. And I'll never forget the 6 people that sat in that meeting. I announced myself as an addict in an AA meeting. I didn't share around food. I just shared around my disease. I read How It Works 120 days in a row. I sat and placed myself where I could see the 3rd step prayer and the 7th step prayer on the wall because they all knew it by heart and they said it every single day. And I had never said the 3rd step prayer and I didn't even know what the 7th step prayer was. And I went to that meeting and How It Works, oh boy, I heard about How It Works every single day. And it began to sink into me and they opened up 2 books that saved my life. One was the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the other was the AA 12 and 12. And that's where I really heard a message of depth and weight. And, you know, it was really interesting because the Big Book talks about we are people who wouldn't normally mix. And I will just tell you that my best friend in that room, he's an auto mechanic. He spray paints cars for a living. He's a gutter alcoholic. And his story was to eat his vomit out of the gutter. That's one of my best friends today. He's recovered too. By the grace of God, God saved him and me. Or how about the nurse who was in charge of the main hospital in Denver, who was there because she was basically on probation from work because she was drinking so much. She recovered too. Thank you, God, that he saves totally different people from all walks of life, all races, all colors. Because you know what? This disease, it doesn't just say, oh, I'm going to get girls like Jennifer, or oh, I'm going to get girls like Amy, or oh, I'm going to get girls like Sally. No, it doesn't say that. It gets anybody, right? So it doesn't discriminate. And I sat in that meeting. I did get recovered. I met with my story and he talked about a doggerel on a tombstone. I was able to say, well, what's a doggerel on a tombstone? And he sat there and told me what it was. And he told me how I could apply this to compulsive overeating, even though it talked about alcohol, the compulsive overeating. And I love that part of working with others today is sitting and carrying a message of depth and weight and just bringing the big book alive for people, because that's what was done for me. I'll never forget. I had the opportunity to go to an AA Al-Anon retreat called FOTS, FOTS, Fellowship of the Spirit. It was a group of compulsive overeaters. One of my sponsors, I actually had two. I was a pretty hard-headed girl. They needed to both sit across from me, and they did make me cry. I'm not going to lie, every Saturday. He was 35 years recovered in AA, and this was the group and the fellowship and the tribe that he recovered with. And so we went up to FOTS in Estes Park, Colorado. And I heard the big book message come alive even more. And I thought, oh, you know, I was making my ninth step amends. I was on 10 and 11. I hadn't, you know, totally started working with others yet. But, you know, that was where I was. I was in a place to hear the message. And they call it magic on the mount, or the miracle on the mountaintop up in Estes Park. And I will just tell you that I was surrounded by 585 people in recovery. And that's where I fell in love with my creator. I fell in love with God. And I didn't really go into the whole, kind of religious background that I grew up in. I grew up Catholic. I served in the Baptist church for 14 years, served in ministry. I studied every book of the Bible. That didn't save a girl like me. I know that God is real. I know that God does exist. And I know because I found God on that mountaintop. And I think that's a pretty sacred space and place for me to be. I'm so grateful for this program. What do I do today? I'll just speak to that a little bit. You can maybe tell me how much time I have left on the clock. I think I lost you in there somewhere. 2 minutes? Okay. So where I am today in the program of Overeaters Anonymous, I'm working with others. I'm keeping my house clean. What does that mean? I constantly do inventory. When something upsets me, it's called a resentment. I look at it as an upset today. People, places, institutions upset me. I know that I'm powerless over that and that my life will become and has become unmanageable due to those upsets. And I know that I've been restored to sanity. So I turn it over to my higher power and then I embark on step 4, step 5, step 6, step 7. 8 and 9, if I've harmed anybody. And that to me is a 10 step. It's 1 through 9. I get up every morning. I was up at 3:30 this morning only because the dog wanted to go out. But I'm usually up at 4 a.m. every single morning. And why? Because it's a daily practice for me to get up in the morning, for me to get quiet, for me to connect with power, for me just to sit and listen, for me to pray and ask God to guide my words and my thoughts and my actions, to help me set aside everything that I think I know, because my ego rebuilds every single day and I think I got this. I ain't got nothing. That's what I'll tell you today. Nothing. The only thing I have is a daily reprieve contingent on my spiritual maintenance. And it was interesting because I found this like in my attaché case when I was here this morning getting ready. And it's the serenity prayer. And it says here, one day at a time. You know, I might be in program for several years and recovered, but I'm still doing this thing with you guys one day at a time. And I work with others. When my phone rings, I say to myself, you know what? God's calling, pick it up. how can I be of service? Just this morning, somebody called me and I said, hey, come to a meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. And I let them know, come be in fellowship, you know, come do this thing, because it's a WE program. That's the first two letters in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I came in as a me, right? And now I'm here as a we, it's the big W. And I couldn't do life without you guys. You're the ones that showed me who I was and that you were just like me and that I didn't have to be afraid and I didn't have to live in fear every single day. Now I still live in fear. I still have resentments. I still harm others, but I have a way in which to deal with all of them. It's called the 12 steps. And I'll just end by saying this. The 12 steps for me are like a clock on the wall, right? They go in a circle. The hands kind of rotate this way. They don't rotate backwards. They rotate in order. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. And you know what? That clock works as long as what? As long as there's power to it. Thank you. I'll finish by saying this. As long as there's power to the back of that clock, those are batteries. I have to access power on a daily by daily, minute by minute basis. That's what I have to do. And so I have to stop. I have to pause when I get agitated. I have to pray. I have to say the serenity prayer. I go to these meetings. I work with others. That's where I am today. Having access to power. I didn't know that was my dilemma, but you all taught me that in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm super grateful. So thanks for letting me share just a little snippet of my story and where I've been today. I'm super grateful and I'm excited to hear what others have to say. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Janae, for your pitch and for being of service. It is now time for a question and answer period until 10:55. So we are open, the floor is open for questions.
Hi, Jen, Rhiannon, thank you so much for agreeing to come and your pitch was amazing. It spoke directly to me. My question is this. I'm a fast forgetter. And I loved what you said about my ego is rebuilding every night, because I do that. I'm doing really well and I'm on the beam and I'm chopping wood and I'm carrying water. And then I get real freaking clever. And the phone rang and I don't really want to answer it and down that path. So how did you keep yourself, because you've got a lot of recovery and been in program for a long time. How do you keep yourself? How do you sustain that? How do you not clever your way back into the food or back into the problems?
Thanks. That's a good question. In the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it talks to me and it says right here, we are undisciplined. On page 88 into action, it's at the end of the 11 steps. It says, it works. It really does. You know, it tells me what I need to do every morning, every day. Like the 10th step is what I do during the day. I wake up in the morning and I drop to my knees. I get on my knees and I pray. That's the first thing I do. I don't even go to the bathroom anymore. I just drop to my knees. And then throughout the day, I'm looking at where I'm upset. Who in this world is pissing me off? Where am I not right? How am I not getting my way? Where am I selfish, self-seeking, dishonest? And what am I afraid of today? And that's the 10th step. And I'm constantly doing that. I don't stop, right? I pause. If I have to go to my bedroom and write and start putting it on paper in the columns, I do it. And I make an appointment to talk to someone, my sponsor or another tribe member and recovered fellow in program. Then at night I review my evening. I close my eyes and I say, God, I go through the different things. I mean, there's like what, how many things right here? 10 things that I got to look at before I can close my eyes. I got to make sure I'm connecting in and ending my day with higher power. But my favorite part is it says, we as alcoholics or compulsive overeaters are undisciplined. So the discipline starts from the beginning. And let me just speak to this. It started for me at the beginning with number one, putting the food down. I cannot embark on this journey and I cannot get right with God if I'm still filling myself full of food. If I'm still popping pills, if I'm still exercising, I can't do it. So getting clear is the first thing. Cause I think of like the channel, I'm a channel, right? And God is deep down inside every single man, woman, and child. And above that God are our fears. I call it the sludge and the grudge. It's like the grease trap right above God. And right above that, those are the hair clots. Those are the resentments and the hair clots. And you girls know what I'm talking about. When your sink gets clogged, it is nasty down there. Those hair clots are disgusting and they mold and they're, you pull them out. It's like, it's disgusting. And then above that was the food. So once I get rid of the food, and then I can start working on the resentments and the fears, which is in the 4-step inventory, by the way. Like, I have to concede to my innermost self that I am a compulsive overeater. My life is unmanageable, that I can't do it anymore, that something's going to come in and do it for me. Then what? Then I can embark on the journey and get rid of what? The hair clog, the grease trap. And then guess what? Guess what gets to come out? Guess what gets to shine? God. That's the sunlight of the spirit. I radiate joy, hopefully on a daily basis. I do my best. I'm imperfect and human, right? And then God can come in. He can come into me. But none of that can happen until the food is out, right? And I've conceded to my innermost self. That's where I had to start. I had to start with the discipline of what? A food plan, right? Boundaries around my food. 3 meals and a snack a day. That's what works for me. It was written by somebody else. I don't get the power to choose anymore, right? I put down the exercise. Like, I haven't exercised since August today. That's the neutrality I have. I used to get out and run at 3:00 in the morning, 3 miles every single day, sometimes even go and bike 20 miles on top of that. That's insanity. I couldn't do that anymore. So the discipline for me starts with that. And that's when I sponsor people, is we look at putting boundaries around the food, putting down the food entirely, and then embarking on this journey, right? I never used to get up at 4 a.m. too. That's part of the discipline. So that answered your question, I think. Not if that's right. But I had to kind of go back to tell you that, you know, I can keep sitting in a chair of Overeaters Anonymous and I can keep being a member. That's what I did for many, 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 many months. And I kept saying, I wish I may, I wish I might not have one more stinking bite. And I would leave and I'd go home and eat. And the next week I would restrict. The reality is I had to move from the chair of membership to a chair of recovering. Right? Because the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me I can recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, but I have to physically move from the chair to active recovery, working the steps, putting the food down, working with the sponsor. And then that's how I get recovered. Something bigger than me comes in, rearranges and changes me. And I didn't even tell you what a wreck I was and what a mess and how I used to just, you know, hurt people and cause harm my whole life. That was me. And you're probably like, yeah, right. But I was. I can give you a few phone numbers, people, if you need that. So, okay, I'll pass. That's enough from me. Thanks for your question. Thanks for asking me to come speak.
Barbara, compulsive overeater. Thank you so much, Jen. Really appreciate your pitch. Really powerful. I have a question about, I've put the food down for 19 years, but I lately, since the pandemic started, I've started exercising more. And I, you know, when I first got abstinent 19 years ago, I would like, it only counted if I did like 2 exercises a day. And I'm finding a real thrill from spin now. And it's like, if I feel like I'm over, like I feel so great. And I was wondering, I mean, I feel like it's important for me to exercise. I'm nearly 70, but that balance is not good. I'm not good with exercise balance. I heard you say you don't exercise at all, but I feel like I need to exercise. But you know, the balance, I don't want to be crazy either, you know, so that's, I'm an addict too. So I'm not good at judging. And how do you balance things that you want more of?
Yeah, that's good. And I'm not good at balancing either. If I was good at balancing, I'd do a little of it, right? I'm just saying I have, due to medical reasons and other things, I haven't been exercising. I'll just speak for myself. When it comes to exercise, yeah, do we need to physically move our body? I do. The question I have to ask myself is, am I seeking an effect from the exercise? Am I getting something from it? Because for me, exercise was so beautiful. Not only for 45 minutes to an hour and a half, would I burn and would I do the classes and would I lift the weights, but then I would seek an effect afterwards because I would hurt and I would ache. And that for me was even more of an effect afterwards. So I got high off the high. Does that make sense? So for me, when I did start exercising, I'll just speak to this in program. program, I had to do two things. One, I had to check with my nutritionist because if I did anything over 3 miles, I had to add so much to my food plan because I needed to be honest about it around my food. So she told me, if you do X amount of miles on your bike, you add this, this, and this. If you do X amount of running, you're going to add this, this, and this. So that's what I had to do. I also had to, for a while, not very long, probably for like 6 to 8 months, I had to commit my exercise to my sponsor. And I said, I'm going to work out X amount of days a week. And I didn't even get to choose my own exercise plan. I had to go to somebody. I had to tell them about my history with compulsive overeating, exercise, anorexia, and bulimia. They put together a plan for me and I had to follow it. And I followed it to a T. Not because I have to be so strict, but because that's what I do. I need boundaries and parameters around food and exercise for me. So that's just what I did. And it ebbs and flows. Like summertime's great for me. I like to go out and walk. I like to go on my paddleboard. I like to ride my bike. I like to do all those things. But you know what? First and foremost, I go to God and I say, hey, God. And God will usually tell me, he'll tap me on the shoulder and be like, hello, a little too much exercise this week. You know, he would say stuff like that to me. And then I check in with my sponsor, my nutritionist, and go from there. So that's what I did. I hope that's helpful.
Hi, Jen. I'm Jennifer, compulsive overeater. Thank you so much for your pitch and everything else. Would you be willing to share like how you got to the food plan that works for you and, you know, kind of items that work, items that don't work, and just kind of finding your boundaries and what worked for you?
Yeah, it's really messy. Are you ready for this? Do you have a half hour? No, I'm just kidding. I don't think figuring out the food is the easiest part. I think it's the hardest part. Again, it has to be a discovery. We have, I can only diagnose myself. I only know as an addict what I can eat. When I came into the program, just hear me say this. This is what I did because I had two male sponsors who liked data. And so I used my Fitness Pal. It's probably a 4-letter word. At least it was to the nutritionist once I got there. And that's how I tracked all my calories. Remember, I came in underweight. So I was under eating. So I had to make sure I was tracking all my nutrition and I could not go to bed before I ate all those calories. I also was restricting. I didn't eat any grains. I didn't eat any potatoes, any starches. I only ate 2 kinds of fruits when I came in Overeaters Anonymous. My brain was very warped around that. And it wasn't until a certain amount of time where I was like starting to, it was summertime, starting to be able to run and walk again. Cause I had 3 discs replaced in my neck. And so I just remember saying to my sponsor, like, you know, how do I know how much food to eat or what to eat? And he looked at me and he said, it's time that you go to a nutritionist, because there's a Dignity of Choice food plan that Overeaters Anonymous puts out, and it's quite lovely and it works. And I have sponsees use it when we first start working. But for me, who's 5'8", and for a sponsee who's 5'2", it's not the same. And I'm not going to give somebody my food plan and I'm not going to eat off somebody else's food plan. That's one thing I've learned in this program, because it would kill them and it would kill me. So getting a nutritionist. And then I'll just say this quickly, and you can call me if you want to know more in detail about it. But what I do is I actually work with my sponsees, and we take a trip through the grocery store. And we do a food-a-log, which is kind of like a drunk-a-log, which is what the alcoholics did. And we look at what we ate, how much we ate, when we ate it. And then you can kind of figure out for yourself, like, what am I allergic to? Because I came in here not eating sugar and flour. So you tell me what my problem was. Well, I had eaten sugar and flour sometime in my life. I think the Twinkies at age 8 were sugar and flour. So the reality is I had a problem with sugar and fat, flour and fat and salt and combinations of those things. But I had to sit down and I had to do an in-depth detailed list. And I had to look at the sweeteners that I was using in those protein shakes. Like, I saw an effect from those. They were sweet. They were yummy. I used stevia by the dropperfuls, not drops, dropperfuls. So I abused all those things. So I sit down with sponsees and we really take a look at that. I never tell anybody what they can and can't eat. I let them discover it out. And then they go to the nutritionist and the nutritionist can figure out a food plan. And has my food plan changed? Yes, it has. Because as you've heard, I've exercised. I'm not exercised right now. I'm not exercising. You know, we did go for a walk this morning. We walked about 1.5 miles. Okay. I don't have to eat anything extra, that I know. But I do know what I eat, 3 meals a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and then a snack. And it's that easy. And I don't even really think about what I eat anymore. It's pretty easy. Like if my family's eating pasta, I don't eat pasta, right? Like I have my own food set up. I know what's abstinent for me. And in fact, I'll just tell you this, that my kids love chicken green beans and rice. They like a lot of my abstinent meals. So they'll eat those with me, except for they just add a lot of sauce on top. So I hope that's helpful, but Jennifer, take down my number. I love to talk to you about it in more detail. Yeah.
It is now time to close the meeting. Thanks to our speaker and to those who gave service. We welcome back anyone who wishes to attend, no matter where they are in the recovery process. Would someone please read the promises? Does anybody have that available?
I have it. Socorro, compulsive overeater.
Thank you.
Promises. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
Thank you, Socorro. After a moment of silent meditation, would you please join me in the Serenity Prayer? God, grant me the serenity
to accept the things we cannot change,
courage to change the things we can,
and wisdom
to know the difference.
Be done. Thank you. Keep coming back. It works if you work it, and we are worth it. Thank you, Jen.
Thank you, Jen.
Thank you, Jen. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Thanks for having me.